we present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello! And welcome to the News Quiz. We start with an excerpt from the Globe Theatre website, read by Cathy Clugston.
We don't allow visitors to go onto the stage during the tours of the Globe Theatre or Sam Wanamaker Playhouse. This is partly for reasons of safety, but mainly because the Globe stage is a very special place and reserved exclusively for our actors and certain classes.
Our thanks to Alex Dunn for sending that in. Now, let's meet the teams. We'll welcome first, on my left, Simon Evans and Zoe Lyons. And opposite them, on my right, Hugo Rifkin and Angela Barnes. Hugo, who wants to wait and she when it comes to his successor?
This is Xi Jinping, who is the Premier of China. What's happening in China? Basically, they don't really bother with anything like elections in China. They just periodically say who's in charge of stuff. And this time, Xi Jinping has appointed five new people to the Politburo Standing Committee, which is like the senior committee of all the committees that run China. And they're all men in their 60s, which isn't very diverse. Indeed, they're all Chinese, which is basically racist. And they're going to be the people who are, you know, running China for the foreseeable future. What's interesting about it is because they're all in their 60s, there's no obvious successor to him. It's not clear who's going to be the person who takes over when he goes, if he ever does. And people see this as a big sort of push for him to secure his legacy. Part of what he's doing now, they're changing the constitution in order to include his philosophy, which they call Xi Jinping Thought for the New Era of Socialism with Chinese Special Characteristics. And I have no idea what that means, but it's right up there with sort of New Labour, New Britain for sheer snappy catchphrase.
I'll tell you what, though. Did you watch any of the footage from the Congress on that?
Oh,
say
yeah,
what
great.
You like about totalitarians. They can put on a do, can't they? You know, Theresa May must have been watching that going, well, no bloody letters fell off his wall, did they? I'm not saying I'm a communist, but I like the look.
It's a very regimented look, isn't it? They did look like a sort of slightly bizarre version of Kraftwerk as they came out all in their little red ties. And nobody knew who he would choose until they came out onto a red carpet. I thought that must be quite exciting. It's like sort of going through to the judges' houses stage in X Factor, isn't it? Who is it? Oh, it's blokes in their 60s. He's got a point. If you do want to sort of... if you want to do well, surround yourself with people who are slightly older. That's what I do in every half marathon I've ever run. I enter in the veteran category, surround myself with people in their 60s and 70s, and then take them down on the line. Yeah.
There's something about him, I suppose, that looks quite cool, and I suppose it's just nice to see a leader who doesn't look like they're in the grip of a panic attack the entire time, just screaming, "Let me be clear," over and over again until their allotted time is over.
Have you been to China, Miles?
Not yet, Hugo,
no,
not yet.
I went there a few years ago, and every taxi I went into, when they found out I was from Britain, they asked me about Boris Johnson. It was really weird. They thought he was amazing. In the same way that they thought Wallace and Gromit was amazing. But... but they really, everyone wanted to talk about Boris Johnson.
You have to say, given that the spectacle that we saw recently, if you'd had those five men and Boris Johnson on that stage, he would have stood out, certainly.
are you on board with the communists, Simon?
I mean, I think really, you know, in all honesty, you can't understand what's going on in China without going back to at least the second and ideally the first Opium War. You know.
And what do they tell us, Simon?
Well... The Opium Wars are quite interesting in the sense that they were one of the more shameful periods, of course, of British history, where we imposed addiction on large swathes of the Chinese population in order to balance our trade deficit with them. And obviously they pay close attention to that, and that's what they're doing with us now, except instead of opium, we're addicted to a load of cheap plastic crap. But it still works, clearly. I find them impressive. And to be honest, I'm not going to say anything bad or beastly about the Chinese because I can see which way the wind is blowing. And in a few years' time, what I say now may make all the difference between a nice cushy job in a state-run gentleman outfitters and, you know, feeding fuel rods into Hinckley Sea wearing nothing but a leather penny and a pair of marigolds. So I'm staying strong on this.
Ha, 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 ha. This is the news that Xi Jinping has secured a second term as president of China and is now thought to be the most powerful Chinese leader since Mao. We here in the UK don't really have much understanding of how China works, in the same way that ants don't have much understanding of how an anteater works, despite how large a part it's likely to play in their future. On Wednesday, the new Politburo Standing Committee was unveiled and scenes reminiscent of Strictly Come Dancing, except where you replace the celebrities with six elderly Chinese men and dancing with talking about communism. The atmosphere of curious sexual energy and barely veiled hatred remains common to both. The new committee contains no obvious successor to Xi, one of the ways it differs from our system. There is no Chinese equivalent of Jacob Rees-Mogg, for instance, and if there was, he would almost certainly be imprisoned in a forced labour camp. The wise East has much to teach us. All this potentially makes Xi the most powerful man in the world, behind only Donald Trump and the guy with the video of Donald Trump being weed on by Russian sex workers. 2 points to Hugo. Zoe, whose letters are purely academic?
This is Conservative MP Chris Heaton-Harris, who this week wrote to the vice-chancellors of all of the universities in the UK asking them if they could provide information on the lecturers there teaching European studies, particularly with a focus on Brexit, and to supply the syllabus and links to reading material, etc., etc. And Chris Heaton-Harris is a well-known Eurosceptic. People very much decided that this was possibly a case of McCarthyism, of checking up on universities and checking the way that they are teaching about Brexit, and if it was more sort of Remain-leaning. This seemed really strange. And then Joe Johnson, the universities minister, then came out and said, look, what Chris is actually doing here, he's doing a little bit of research for a book. And you think, oh, how many times have people been caught just doing a little bit of research? So many things, you know, Googling how to dispose of a body, that sort of thing. Just doing a little bit of research for a book, you know. And Joe also said that he wasn't doing this in a sort of parliamentary sort of capacity. However, he did send the letter to the vice-chancellors on Commons-headed paper, which does give it a slight government feel.
If nothing else, he's nicking stationery.
Exactly. Exactly.
I love the thought of the text message that Joe Johnson must have sent to him after that interview. Go, good news, Chris. I think I've got you off the hook, but you've got to write a book.
I mean, of course he's not writing a book. Did you ever meet anyone who was writing a book who didn't immediately tell everyone he was writing a book? And he didn't say in the letter, I'm writing a book. So he clearly wasn't. I think we're all being terribly mean about this, because I think if the government really wants to finally go to university and learn about Brexit, we should be completely supportive of this and not do them down in any way. But it's part of this whole thing now that you have, like, people on the right mainly being very upset that universities are a bit lefty, you know, and it's like they've just noticed. It's like, of course universities are lefty. They're universities. They're non-profit-making entities which pay people badly and traditionally funded by the state. That, you know, of course they're lefty. It's like complaining that you don't get more communists working in private finance, you know, or people with more catastrophic brain injuries working as astrophysicists. Or, you know, it's like, of course they're lefty. Idiots.
I mean, do you think this is a witch hunt? And in fact, I mean, should academics be burned? or are they too damp?
What he should have been doing, he should have sent scouts out into the refectories of these universities and take a little dictaphone in and just record the lecture and get the information that way. They're never going to get a straight answer from a lecture, are they? All these sort of belted, bearded socialists.
This is the story of Conservative MP Chris Heaton-Harris, who was criticised this week for writing to universities asking for details of their teachings on Brexit, which some thought was a bit sinister. Heaton-Harris asked each university for details of their syllabus, confusing politics lecturers who had never previously heard the word syllabus employed to describe what they offer students. Basically a collection of opinions they've held since the mid-70s, occasionally punctuated by bouts of sexual harassment. The Daily Mail asked readers if they'd experienced an anti-Brexit backlash while at university. I dare say that if you're at university and you're reading the Daily Mail, you're experiencing quite a lot of backlash for a multitude of reasons. 2 points to Zoe. Angela, who could have been going from A&E to B&B?
So this is the announcement that an NHS trust in Essex, I think it was considering a sort of Airbnb system for people recovering from routine surgery. So rather than blocking a bed on the ward, you could go and recover from your minor surgery in a stranger's spare room. I'm not sure who first floated the idea, presumably somebody who'd never seen the film Misery. You have to feed them 3 microwave meals a day is part of the deal. So basically, you could come out of hospital with a broken ankle, go into this scheme and go home with type 2 diabetes and kidney stones. So,
what's weird about this is that you actually suggested this on News Quiz a few months ago. Yeah. And I think they're using this as policy-making material.
What confuses me about this is if your own gran is sick and comes out of hospital to stay in your house, you don't get paid. But if someone else's does, you do, which means you've got to pretend, basically, to make the money that you don't know your own relatives. But it also means if you go into a house and there's, say, you know, 4 grandparents in the same double bed, like in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, you don't know whether these are just great salt-of-the-earth people looking after their elderly relatives or some kind of factory farm or a saga orgy. I mean, there's no way of knowing which one of these is going on.
Also, the idea, 3 microwaved meals a day. What's a microwave breakfast? What is that?
Porridge. Next.
Yeah, it is porridge.
Fair enough.
Or a Weetabix on fire.
No. Miles, do you make porridge on the Arga?
It's not I do, but it's only a 2-door. It's not fancy. This is the story of Care Rooms, a company hoping to pilot a new scheme where recuperating hospital patients are placed in people's spare rooms. Care Rooms set up a stall in the South End Hospital restaurant to attract potential hosts, presumably hoping to appeal to those who are already enjoying the heady atmosphere of hospital and want to take a bit of that magic home with them. Presumably, if you have more than one spare room in your house, you could take a couple of patients in, and if you lived in a big enough house, you could take in hundreds, maybe hire some staff to help care for them, maybe create a building specifically to care for people, and you could pay the people who care for them. Would that work? We just don't know. You try to be positive about ideas like this, don't you? But I wonder if anyone will find themselves convalescing in a bungalow in Basildon, eating their 3rd Ginster's buffet bar of the day under a stained West Ham duvet and thinking, well, healthcare in this country seems to be working marvellously. Still, ideal for those of us who have always fantasised about one day waking up on a stranger's sofa wearing nothing but a backless gown. Two points to Angela. Simon, who's left Labour in a state of suspense?
Ah, this will be Jared O'Mara, a young man who took Nick Clegg's old seat at Sheffield Hallam in the uncalled-for June election of this year. This is, of course, the world we live in now. A young man gains unlooked-for office. I think it's fair to say even when he stood against Clegg, he didn't expect to win. I don't think the party expected him to. There were not very extensive background checks on his suitability for office and so on. And then tweets and so on emerge and message boards. And he says, well, this was 10, 15 years ago, I was only 23 at the time and obviously still in the throes of adolescent turmoil, which is a little bit fast and loose with the dates, but, you know, giving the benefit of doubt. It now emerges that a young woman called Sophie Evans, no relation to me or him, I assume, whom he met on a dating website and it went nowhere. She said there were no hard feelings, which may well have been why he felt angry and thwarted afterwards, but she then approached him where he was working as a DJ, and she approached him at the deck and he told her that she was, I think, an ugly bitch and made some other remarks that she said were not repeatable. And so it appears that he is not quite the reformed character that he would have us believe.
You know, what he said to that girl in that nightclub, that is shameful, because he's 35. He shouldn't be anywhere near a nightclub.
There's a kind of person on the left that doesn't make up most of the left, but certainly makes up a bit of it, which, like, you know, they used to hate women and gay people and Jews, and then they realised that wasn't all right. And so now they've transferred the exact same sort of hate onto Tories and Blairites, and still Jews, quite a lot of the time, just for tradition's sake. But, and you know, he came out of Momentum. He was the Momentum candidate. And a lot of Momentum really is about saying nasty things about Tories on the internet. And it's supposed to be strange that somebody prominent in it has a track record of saying nasty things on the internet isn't perhaps as surprising as it should have been.
So should he be held up as more of a sort of poster boy for the movement?
Well, he could be.
He must have had a moment, though, when he was selected for the Women and Equality Select Committee, where he must have had a moment where he goes, well, they don't do any raking around.
He was an equal opportunities writer of bad things on the internet as well, though. I mean, he did also say that he wanted to sodomise Jamie Cullum with a piano leg.
With a piano, yeah.
People forget that people in the public eye are people, you know. Jamie Cullum's got kids, and he's a jazz musician. Haven't they suffered enough?
Yeah.
Do you know who I feel sorry for? Is Nick Clegg. Like, being unseated by a vile misogynist. Like, he knows how Hillary Clinton feels now.
The Labour Party have suspended MP for Sheffield Hallam Jared O'Mara following an incident in a nightclub earlier this year. O'Mara also made offensive comments online about celebrities, including Angelina Jolie and Girls Aloud. A Labour spokesperson said this sort of language has no place in the party, suggesting that Labour has come a long way from Harold Wilson and his 1965 speech, "Which one of the Supremes I'd like to bang and why?" I know some listeners may not be familiar with all the technical terms surrounding an online story, so to explain it as simply as I can, the internet is like a version of the Daily Telegraph that is too big to iron. O'Mara was also accused of using the term "sexy little slags" in a music review, which many felt was an inappropriate way to describe the Belfast Philharmonic. O'Mara wrote that he would sack one of the band Girls Aloud and then have an orgy with the rest of them. The chair of the Women Inequalities Committee said, "We expect our members to want to have an orgy with all of Girls Aloud or none of them. I'm sorry, that's just the way it is." 2 points to Simon. And at the end of round one, the scores are Simon and Zoe have 4, and so too do Hugo and Angela. We start round two with a typo spotted in a Christmas appeal on the Samaritan's Purse website.
Please support this fantastic appeal by filling a shoebox with your child and bringing it to a donation point.
Thanks to Andy McFarlane for sending us that. Zoe, who wasn't spoiling us with their choice of ambassador?
This is the leader of the World Health Organization, a gentleman called Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, who bizarrely appointed Robert Mugabe as a goodwill ambassador for the World Health Organization. Now, Tedros has been voted in as the leader of the World Health Organization in May under the slogan, "Let's prove the impossible is possible." I think simply by putting the words Robert Mugabe and goodwill into the same sentence, he has really come true on that slogan. Mugabe himself has sort of he's run the country into the ground over the last few decades. Their health system is in absolute pieces. Doctors don't get paid. There's a shortage of drugs. And he himself, he's the only one who's got any sort of health care in Zimbabwe. And it's not in Zimbabwe, it's in Singapore. He flies to Singapore for medical treatment. Well, one of the conditions he has is apparently a condition where he has to keep his eyes shut for long periods of time. You go, "He's asleep, mate. That's what it's happening." There was a huge outcry, obviously, when this appointment was made, and Tedros decided that perhaps it wasn't such a good idea after all, and he has revoked the decision to make him a goodwill ambassador.
And do you think that's a shame, Simon?
If you want to make a nonagenarian head of state a goodwill ambassador, well, you know, our own Queen would be an obvious example for that. She's a far more healthy specimen.
Do you think she'll feel the role's now being tainted somewhat?
Yeah, possibly.
She'll know she's second choice.
That is sloppy seconds, isn't it, really?
And also, is it a job that anyone wants? Like, did Robert Mugabe want to be a goodwill ambassador? Is it like that time I went off sick from work for 2 days and I came back and I was health and safety rep? Is it like that? Well, I looked up who some of the other goodwill ambassadors for the World Health Organization. He's not the only controversial one.
Right.
Because Xi Jinping's wife is a goodwill ambassador.
Is she called Xi Jinping?
She's controversial because she is known for having sung to the troops after the Tiananmen Square massacre. But also, another goodwill ambassador for the World Health Organization is Craig David. Craig David, yeah, who's got a lot in common with Robert Mugabe. Apparently they both like to chill on Sunday.
That's right. He was the United Kingdom's goodwill ambassador in 2010, so clearly not a role to be taken lightly.
Grace Mugabe, Robert Mugabe's wife, she's actually said that Robert Mugabe would stand again in an election, even if he was a corpse. Which you think, God, well, if he's healthier than most of Zimbabweans when he's dead... What does that say about the state of the health of the nation over there?
He's in remarkably... He has the knees of a 25-year-old, Robert Mugabe. Unfortunately, they're on a necklace, but...
I was trying to think whether there's a worse job for Robert Mugabe than Goodwill Ambassador, and I realised there is one worse job, and that would be to be on the Archers, because everyone would lose their farm.
It's the same sort of surprise that you'd feel if you heard that sort of Rain Rooney had become Poet Laureate, isn't it?
Did they not recently make Saudi Arabia Goodwill Ambassadors, whatever, for women's rights or something? There seems to be a lot of really world-class trolling going on from these big... Was that right?
The World Health Organization is entirely satirical. Yes.
Yeah.
This was the short-lived appointment of Zimbabwean leader Robert Mugabe by the World Health Organization as a goodwill ambassador for non-communicable diseases, an appointment that lasted for 4 days before being withdrawn by the WHO in the face of widespread international criticism. The appointment was made by the WHO's Director-General, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, who we know very little about, other than that he clearly enjoys a laugh. Mugabe is great at giving out health advice to people in Zimbabwe, such as, if you feel a burning sensation around your genitals, you may well have disagreed with me in the past. The decision to appoint Robert Mugabe as Goodwill Ambassador came about after a meeting took place at the World Health Organization that started with the phrase, "Let's throw it all out there, there are no bad ideas." It does seem a bizarre appointment. It reminds us of the year when, due to a mix-up, the BBC booked Idi Amin to host Children in Need. Instead of their intended host, Pol Pot. 2 points to Zoe. Simon, you lucky thing, have a listen to this. It's getting hot in here, so hot, so take off all your clothes. I am getting so hot, I want to take my nose off. Oh, it's getting hot. Simon, who's created a climate of inaccuracy?
Oh, this is Nigel Lawson, who went unchallenged on Radio 4 as he uttered climate heresies. And he mooted that there'd been no significant increase in world temperatures in the last 10 years and the whole thing was a racket. And this was allowed to pass unchallenged on Radio 4, and they've had to apologise. They are an odd bunch of cranks, the climate change deniers, but I rather like them. I think it adds a little bit of colour to an otherwise gloomy scenario, doesn't it? I don't know where he gets his ideas from. Possibly Nigella made him a baked Alaska recently and he went there, you see?
The Global Warming Policy Foundation that he's a part of has sort of been spewing out figures that aren't correct, and they've been saying that the temperatures have actually been steady or going down for the last few years, when in fact they've clearly been going up year on year. We've had the hottest weather we've ever had, you know, in the last 10 years.
Well, only according to scientists, though.
I know. It's where I go to for my info, you know. And we've seen awful impacts of this, you know, storms and hurricanes and floods. And only this week, you know, it was 20 degrees in London at the end of October. I had my shorts on. Nobody wants to see that. It's awful.
You know, Nigel Lawson is somebody who doesn't really care about the future of the planet and future generations, because if he cared about future generations, he wouldn't have called his daughter Nigella. Really? That's, if that was a normal thing to do, you'd be looking here at Derica Barnes.
I mean, is this evidence, do you think? And I know he's not necessarily into evidence, but is this evidence that old people lie? They come from an age when it was harder to fact-check. You could just sit where you liked, saying whatever you liked about anything. In an authoritative enough voice, red enough trousers, people would generally believe what you were saying.
There is a kind of an elderly British male who is convinced that he can do his own research, thank you very much, and that this stands up, you know.
Well, I mean, it's not as nuts as some, because obviously in the States, there are, you know, whenever there are those awful catastrophic hurricanes that come through the Caribbean and the southern states, you know, there'll always be a pastor in America who blames it on gays, you know. And as a homosexual, sometimes I wake up in the morning and go, did I? How drunk was I last night? Phoning a friend going, did I destroy Puerto Rico? I know, I get a little bit feisty on the tequila and I'm not sure.
it all comes from this. It's like this idea of balance that we have now. That you know, the news particularly has to be balanced. And what's that sort of come to mean, particularly on sort of broadcast news, is that if you have somebody on who says something sensible, then you need to have balance from somebody who's not sensible. Yeah. So if you have somebody on who's a scientist, then you need to have somebody on who reads the entrails of pigs and says whatever mad crap comes into their brain, like Nigel Lawson. It's like if you have somebody who doesn't cook feces into brownies, you have to have somebody who does cook feces into brownies. Balance is.
It's not the job of a Today programme to be the arbiter of who's lying and who isn't.
Sorry, it literally is.
You should ask. This is the news that the BBC have upheld complaints that climate change sceptic Lord Lawson was insufficiently challenged on the Today programme when he said that global temperatures have not risen in the last decade. Both sides of any argument have to be aired on the BBC. Talking about climate change without giving a voice to sceptics would be like talking about the dangers of smoking without balancing them out by talking about the mild, smooth taste of a child-rolled cigar. The BBC admits that it should have challenged Lord Lawson, maybe by letting off a foghorn every time he tried to speak, or repeating all his statements back to him in a silly voice. If anything, the world is getting cooler. The BBC initially said that Lawson's comments reflected the views of the US government, although if we now have to maintain a balance between reality and the views of the US government, then it may be time to pack Sophie Raworth into a box and turn BBC News into flats. 2 points to Simon. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share?
This is from Simon Worsfold, who saw this on the Thompson Rivers Park and Rec website today. Life is short. Work somewhere awesome. The Thompson Rivers Parks District is not currently hiring.
This has been sent in by Ruth Tanner, and it's taken from the Durham Advertiser. And it's go-as-you-please funerals, woodland burials, £3,750. Buy one, get one free.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Hugo and Angela have 8, but this week's winners are Simon and Zoe with 9. Before we leave you, here is a clipping from the Southwark News, spotted by Tom Layton.
Condoms will be given out for free at libraries across South London. It's not yet known whether they will stretch to libraries north of the river.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Simon Evans, Zoe Lyons, Hugo Ripkind and Angela Barnes. In the chair was Miles Jupp, and the news was read by me, Cathy Clubston. The chair's script was written by James Kettle, Benjamin Partridge and David Reed, with additional material by Saskia Preston and Robin Morgan. The producer was Joe Nunnery, and it was a BBC Studios production.